Hello. Welcome. I'm Jeffrey Snover. I'm a distinguished engineer and the lead architect for Windows Server and System Center Data Center. And today we're going to talk to you about JIA, Just Enough Admin. So first, you know, here's the deck, but let's forego the deck. Let's get right into it. Behold, the wonderful, the marvelous PowerShell ISE. JIA is a desired state configuration resource kit that will be available to you, I think, starting today. Yes, Mont? Yes? Okay, should be today. If not today, I'll hit somebody on the head and it'll be available tomorrow or Friday. Now, how many of you came to my session with Don Jones, PowerShell Unplugged? Excellent, thank you so much. Hopefully fill out your forms. In that session, if you didn't attend, I talked about a new thing called PowerShell Get. PowerShell Get is essentially a way to have the community share artifacts. And in particular, there's a bunch of desired state configuration resources up in the cloud that you can pull down. And so the way you find that is you say find module. It's pretty simple, yeah? And so you do a find module, and look here. XGIA. Okay, so XGIA is available as a module. And how do you do that? And you just say install module XGIA, and it will go up to the web, download that package, and install it in your modules, and then it'll be available. Now, I already did it because I was afraid the internet might not work, and I didn't want to trust my entire show to that. But once you have it on board, then you can do things like get command minus module XGIA. And look, I have show examples, show JIA presentation, and show JIA white paper. So let's do this, show JIA white paper. Included in the package is a white paper that explains what we're doing here. Goes through the problem, the solution, so a great set of details, and there is the presentation. So let's start the show. Start JIA presentation. And that's how we'll start. Hoo-ha. So what that means is you can take this material and go show all your friends. Okay. All right. Okay, so now, if you're not up on current events, you know, we've been doing the security stuff for a long time and doing a pretty good job of it. But in the last few years, the bad guys have really upped their game significantly. So that's number one. Number two is we found out that we became aware of the participation of nation states in this area with unlimited budgets, and the level of sophistication that these guys are doing to attack systems is incredibly high. Now, a number of people I've talked to say, well, I'm not too concerned about the US government getting at my data. That's fine positioned if that's your position. But here's the reality. These guys are exposing actual problems with the system, and it's just a matter of time before the real bad guys, the criminals, et cetera, are using the same techniques against us. So if you're not up on current events, there's a tsunami of bad stuff coming our way. Okay? Now, how many people know this guy? Yeah? Okay, Michael Hayden. Michael Hayden, 4-star general, director of the NSA, director of the CIA, director of national intelligence. Now, I first gave this talk to a collection of Microsoft distinguished engineers and technical fellows. And at this slide, I got to this point and I said, now, anybody in the room smarter than this guy? Turns out that was the wrong crowd to ask that question. So I'll ask the second question, that is anybody in the room have any assets more worth protecting than this guy? Yeah, I don't think so. This guy has some stuff that's important to protect. And then there's this guy. Anybody know this guy? Edward Snowden. Edward Snowden is a 30-year-old college dropout. Okay? So gentlemen, to your corners. Let's see how this turns out. Now, Michael Hayden went and made a decision that each of us make every single day. In fact, we couldn't do our jobs without making this decision. In fact, we make it without even really thinking about it. And that decision was, he turned to a guy like Edward Snowden, he says, you're an admin on my systems. And that was perhaps the worst decision this guy ever made in his life. Okay? Just a bad decision. And why is that? And the answer is, of course, that admins have the keys to the kingdom. Admins are gods. Okay? So much so, in fact, and this is just the epitome of irony, is that one of the documents that Edward Snowden released was an NSA document labeled, "I hunt and hack system admins." That's right, you. The NSA is after you. I'm not making this up. And what they said in the document was that the NSA is targeting system administrators through like phishing attacks, Facebook attacks, things like that, not because they've done anything wrong, but because the admins have the keys to the kingdom. That if I can hack the admin, I can get him his credentials and I can get access to all the machines he has access to. So, you know, who better to axe target than the person that already has the keys to the kingdom? So, the point here is, and this is really the big enlightenment, right, is that the admins are part of the attack surface. I mean, we grew up thinking, oh, my attack surface is, you know, my firewall, and then we got a richer. No, that's not really it. It's the software you have installed, and it's this and this and this. And we had these kind of old ideas of what the attack surface is. The reality is that your people are part of the attack surface. And if the person can be attacked, then your systems can be compromised. So, admins. Of course we need administrators, but sometimes people make mistakes. Look, we're humans, we make mistakes. Anybody who saw my unplugged session knows that I make mistakes all the time. I'd be a terrible system administrator. So I make mistakes all the time. And then sometimes the people are bad actors, okay? But they're always a part of the attack surface. So even if you say, hey, my admins, they're fully vetted, they're good guys, doesn't matter. They're part of the attack surface. If a bad guy hacks them, he's got your systems, okay? So JIA, the Just Enough Administration, is all about reducing the risks associated with having admins. Okay, so wouldn't it be a great world if people didn't have to have admin privs to do their jobs? Well, I've talked to a number of customers, and I asked them, I said, well, you know, how many people have admin privs? And the numbers are staggering. And it's like, well, you know, describe some of their activities. What do they do? And it turns out that we often give admin privs to people who really just need to get on a box and restart a SQL service, or get on a box and update a driver and restart the system. You know, relatively minor tasks. But those tasks require admin privs, and so you give the person admin privs. So wouldn't it be great if they could do their job without you having to give them admin privs? Because once they got admin privs, they can do anything. Now, the other thing is, how many of you are familiar with something called Pass the Hash? That's not a Seattle thing. So Pass the Hash basically says that when you log into a system, your credentials are the hash of your credentials are cached. And what that means is that if somebody cracks the machine, right, gets into the machine, they can actually harvest those credentials and use those to then spider throughout the network. So what that means is, for a particular server, you don't want people with high privilege credentials logging in, because if that machine gets cracked, they'll be able to grab all those credentials and then get access to the next systems where they do it again, and then use it next, and they what's called spider out through the network. Very scary stuff. By the way, there's a tool called Mimikatz. And what it does is it literally goes through and harvests these credentials that are cached on a machine and show you to them. And this is what the hackers and pen testers do. And, I'd heard about it, but the first time I actually ran it and saw my credentials there in ASCII text on the screen, I just freaked out. So it is truly, truly something. Okay, so wouldn't it be great if a machine got cracked, they weren't able to harvest all these credentials and then spider their way through the network? And wouldn't it be great if people could only do the things that they needed to do? Look, you're a SQL manager. I love it. You got to do SQL. Stay the heck away from my SharePoint data. What are you doing with that? You don't need that. You know, do you need to restart a server? Really? Okay. And wouldn't it be great if all admin actions were logged? Okay. So these are what we're trying to achieve with the Just Enough Administration Toolkit. So let's take a scenario. I hired myself a new admin. our growing company. Seemed like a bright young guy, seemed to really know his stuff. And over here, I've got my server with my treasure in it. Okay, so my young admin tries to remotely connect to that using PowerShell, and he's denied. It says, hey, talk to your supervisor. In comes our hero, and he says, Jeffrey, I need to be admin on server one to restart SQL. To which I reply, no, Eddie, just use Jia to connect to the maintenance endpoint. So now Ed connects to the maintenance. He says, enter Jia session, server one, minus name maintenance. He's able to connect. He's able to do the tasks. He's able to restart the SQL server. Happy days. Then when he tries to steal the secrets, I just love that error message, you know. Sorry, can't steal secrets. Like, you guys are authorized to steal secrets and you guys aren't, anyway. Okay, so that's sort of what we'd like to, the world we'd like to build. Okay, so that's what this is about. So the approach here is not, this is not a Boolean thing. This is not, oh, you do things the way you do today, stop, do it this new way. Everything switches over. No. This is let's evaluate where you are and incrementally reduce the risks associated with admins. Okay? So first, let's go find those guys that just have a couple things that they need to do on a server that require admin privs. Let's take that and take admin privs away from them and then, you know, allow them to do their task without having admin privs, and then do it again and again and again. So let's do this incrementally. Incrementally reduce the exposure. Next is to reduce the impact of having admin privs, which is to say, wherever possible, I want to perform a task with the least privilege possible, okay? So that if that credential gets stolen, it doesn't go all over the network, right? Domain admin. Domain admin can do anything, so you don't want to be doing stuff as domain admin. You want to use the least amount of admin required to do a task. And then you want to reduce what can be done with those admin privileges. So when I finally give you admin privileges, instead of saying, yep, with that you can do anything, I want to say, with that you can do these and only these things. Okay, so that's what Jia is about. Now, Jia is not new technology, not new at all. In fact, how many of you use Exchange Online? Okay, a few of you. So have you ever thought through, Exchange Online allows you to sit there and do PowerShell, you know, administrative functions against Exchange in the cloud. So Exchange in the cloud, of course, Exchange, of course, does everything through administrative commandlets through PowerShell. And yet, when they went and did Exchange Online, they had the problem. Hey, how am I going to allow you, somebody who's in no way ever going to get admin privileges to our servers in Redmond, run an Exchange for the world, but I have to give you the ability to run commandlets which require admin privs. So how am I going to do that? And the answer is the Exchange and PowerShell teams got together and we designed a set of security features that allowed you to do that. Jia takes advantage of those security features that we developed many, many years ago. It just, we've never really made them, you know, widely available. They've been widely available, but we haven't publicized them. So here what we're doing is we're taking those same security features and we're presenting it as a toolkit. Next is this, it has a very small set of simple concepts. It turns out that we can get extremely sophisticated very easily with this, but that's actually not, when we go talk to people about deploying it, that level of control, that level of sophistication, is actually a barrier to adoption. So it turns out that the trick to adopting the technology is to make it very simple and easy to deploy. And then we can go and incrementally get more and more sophisticated over time. But to begin with, we want to be very, very simple and straightforward. So the task really has been, as a technologist, I wrote the original code very, very quickly, and it was very very sophisticated, extremely powerful. And then when I talked to people about it, talked to the security guys, like Nir's in the back room, I talked to Nir about it, his eyes got big and he started drooling. It was kind of disgusting, but he loved it. But then when I talk to the guys who actually run our systems, in fact, this is now being used in production on some of our file servers, they looked at it and they said, boy, they saw these problems. Like, boy, how's this going to work? How's that going to work? I don't know if that's going to work. And so we went and made it very, very simple. So we got some very simple concepts. The first concept is a Jia toolkit. So a Jia toolkit is a well-defined set of commands to support a set of activities. So think of a toolkit like a toolkit. You got a plumber's toolkit, put a bunch of wrenches and tape. You got an electrician's toolkit. You got a carpenter's toolkit. Each of these toolkits are to do a specific task, and they have different tools in them. Well, you want to think in terms of toolkits. Okay, what things do you need to do? Oh, you need to do SQL maintenance. What things do I need to do to support SQL maintenance? I need to keep my servers up to date with patches and latest drivers. Oh, okay, well, what things do you need to do there? Probably don't need to be able to restart a SQL database to keep things up to date, right? So you want to think in terms of toolkits. The next is a Jia endpoint, okay? A Jia endpoint is a management connection point where authorized users are provided access to these toolkits that then run as a Jia endpoint account, okay? So it's a name. You're going to connect to this name, and that name's going to be associated with the toolkits. Oh, SQL maintenance. Oh, that has the SQL maintenance toolkit. Or you might have SQL maintenance. It has access to a generalized toolkit and the SQL maintenance toolkit, right? So you can factor these toolkits, and an X endpoint can access one or more of the toolkits. And then when you access that endpoint, there's an ACL. You put an ACL on it, and you'll decide who can come in and who can't. And in general, what you're going to do is you're going to give this ACL such that regular users do not require admin privileges to run this, to get access to this endpoint. But when they get access to the endpoint, then you're going to do a run as, and you're going to give it a Jia session account, sorry, Jia endpoint account. And this Jia endpoint account is a local managed account with admin privs. So basically, underneath the covers, when you create one of these endpoints, I will go create an account that's local. I'll put them in the admin group. You can specify which groups you want. I'll put them in that. And then when you connect to that endpoint, all the actions will run under that account. Okay? So we'll see this. It'll take a while to get clear. And then to make it easy to deploy, we deploy it through desired state configuration. Now, has anybody ever seen one of these things? There you go. This is a blast container. This is what the bomb squad does. They have a suspicious container. They'll go put it in this, and they'll blow it up, right? So it contains the blast. So these Jia endpoints accounts, they're really what puts the server in a blast container, right? If that server gets cracked and you harvest the credentials off that, because all of you are connecting to my server as regular users, if they harvest those credentials, they get credentials which are not very powerful. Right? The only credentials that have any power are the local admin credentials, and they can only be a local they're bounded to that machine. So this use of Jia endpoint accounts put the server in a blast container. Now, eventually, this current version does not support the ability to use global service managed accounts or domain credentials. Eventually, we'll have to go there because there's some issues with trying to do everything as local administration. But we want to go as far as we can with this because when you use those other accounts, if the machine gets cracked, then they will be able to spider their way across the world. And so we want to avoid that as much as possible. So again, this is a blast container. Goal is to put guys like this in there. So this is what it looks like. This is the desired state configuration. I think you'll see it's actually pretty simple, okay? By the way, how many people are using desired state configuration today? Okay, just a couple. Okay, well, this is desired state configuration. Desired state configuration is the latest version of PowerShell supports this feature. It's the ability to declare how you want a system, and you don't pay attention to how it's done, right? You just declare what you want, you hand it to the system makes it so. Sometimes we call it the Jean-Luc Picard model, right? Do you ever watch Star Trek? Picard had like the best job in the world. I want the world this way, make it so. And then Riker, number two, had to go do all the hard work. Well, it's the same model here. You just declare the way you want the world, and then underneath the covers, the system goes and makes it so, and then tells you if there's any problems with doing that. So that's what we're gonna do here. So what I'd start off with is a configuration, and you give it a name, file servers. And then what I'm going to do is I got a for each dollar node in some command, which is going to enumerate all the file servers. Okay? I've got a node where I give it the name of that file server. And what it's going to do then is create a configuration for each one of those nodes. The first thing I'm going to do is to specify this Gia toolkit, and I'm going to give it a name, and that name is going to be storage tools. And here's the heart of it, something called command specs. Now, command specs, you'll see, is where I define what things I want to expose in this toolkit. In this case, it's all PowerShell commands. And so what I'm doing is I'm saying there's a module, and there's the storage module and the SMB share module, and I want to expose those commands to the users. Later, you'll see that this command spec is actually a comma-separated value field that allows you to do very sophisticated stuff. But in the simple case, what I'm saying is I've got a storage toolkit, and I want to put all the storage commandlets and the SMB commandlets in that toolkit. I then create an endpoint, storage admin endpoint, and I specify the toolkit, storage tools. I give it a security descriptor here. And then when I run this, let's see, yeah, when I run this, I'm just trying to see if I can do, I can't show you my cursor. Anyway, when I run file servers, this then runs this and will create a configuration for each one of those file servers. It creates a standards-based document called a MOF. And then the start DSC configuration then takes that, sends it out to all those servers, creates the endpoint, creates the toolbox, and sets it up. The account is done for you automatically. You don't have to know about that. You don't have to specify that. That happens for you automatically. So it's as simple as that. I mean, pretty simple stuff, yeah? Yeah? Reasonable? Yeah. Okay. So now put your seatbelt on, right? Because again, you can start off simple, but then you can get as sophisticated as you like. So in fact, you can have very fine-grained policy control. I mentioned to you that that command spec is in fact a comma-separated value file, or string. And so the list, the things that you can specify are the module, the commandlet name, parameter, validate set, and validate pattern. Okay, so let's explore that. So the first thing says SQL, so I want the SQL module, and then it says get dash star. So what that says is, hey, I'm gonna give this guy the SQL stuff, but I only wanna give him the getters. He can't do any of the sets, can't do any of the removes, et cetera. So often we have give admin privileges to people for people who have to do inventory stuff. I want to go find out what's available on a system. So here what you can do is you can say, I only give you access to the getters so that there's no modifications to the system. The next one, I'll say, hey, I'm going to specify particular commands that I'll give access to. I'll give you access to get process and get service. And then I'm going to give you access to stop process. But then notice here, it says name. So when you stop a process, you can stop it by ID, you know, process ID, or by name. Here I'm specifying that you can only specify stop processes by name. So by specifying name and not specifying ID, I'm eliminating the ID tag, so you can no longer do that. Furthermore, I'm saying you can only stop processes by name, and the names have to be one of the following values, calc or notepad. So you can think through the things that says, hey, you know, I'm going to give you admin privileges, but if I give you admin privileges to stop processes, you can stop LSASS, and that'll reboot the server. So maybe I want to do that. Maybe I want to say, no, here are the things that you can stop. Okay, and that's how you specify it here. Here, I say you can restart a service, again, specifying the name, and this is a regular expression. That up arrow says the string has to start with SQL. Okay, so you can get very fine grain in the control of this toolkit. And of course, the way we actually see this working is that you'll do your authoring in Excel. Right, it's a nice tool. You'll set yourself up with something like that. You'll save it as a CSV. It'll warn you, are you really sure you know what you're doing? You say, yeah, I know what I'm doing. And then what you'll do with this command specs, again, one of the powers of desired state configuration is this wonderful mix between fully declarative and imperative. So instead of having that command, you know, all those command specs in line, instead what we're going to do is we're going to say, get it from this file, sql.csv, and you'll have to specify the raw parameter so to make it work correctly. So that's how you'll do the authoring. Let's have some fun. All right. So I showed you how you can use PowerShell Windows Management Framework 5, May preview, out tomorrow or the next day. It has the find module, and you'll be able to find module and install module to get the Jia toolkit. When you get the Jia toolkit, you have these three commands: the white paper, go read all the details; the presentation, share with your friends and colleagues, show them how smart you are; and show Jia examples. So show Jia examples then brings them up in the ISE. Okay, so there's setup Jia. That is in fact really just reset Jia. I gave it the wrong name. So that's when we've experimented with a bunch of things and then we want to clean out the system to start from the very beginning. So let's show you some Jia. Okay, so here we're going to have demo one. What we have to do is we have to import the DSC resource, Jia 1. We have a toolkit, we're going to call it process. We give it the name process. And here's the command specs. Notice I'm giving it get process, get service, stop process, can only stop things by name, and the only values can be calc and notepad. And then restart service can only restart things that begin with A. I then set up the Jia endpoint, its name, the toolkit that I want to give it to, process, that's the name here. Here's the SIDL. And there's this notion of depends upon. Depends upon basically says, hey, before you make this true, make that other thing true. So because this depends upon the toolkit, if you try and create it before the toolkit exists, that will be an error. It's not a really big deal because of the way DSC works. Well, the first time you do this, if you try and create the endpoint before the toolkit, it'll get an error saying the toolkit's not found. But it'll also go create the toolkit, because that doesn't depend on anything. And then we do this what's called convergence cycle. Every 30 minutes, we'll go and try and make sure that the configuration's true. So you could have detected that error and run it yourself again or change the file so it works right the first time. But if you didn't do any of that, then 30 minutes later, it would go and run this again and say, make it true. You'd try and recreate the endpoint. The first time you ran it, it created the endpoint, the toolkit. So the second time you run it and you try and create the endpoint, looking for the toolkit, it'll already be there and work. And this is a concept we call convergence or self-healing. It's quite wonderful. Now, that's an example where, hey, I didn't author it the right way, and that's okay, it'll converge, the right thing will happen. Alternatively, what might have happened is somebody might have deleted the toolkit, and then the next convergence cycle, that will get detected and auto-healed. So desired state configuration is quite a wonderful thing and a fantastic thing for this particular domain because it allows you to focus not on, hey, the mechanics of how am I going to keep this, get this thing out there and up and running. It allows you to focus instead on this activity right here. What are the right things to give right there and right here? What things do I want to give to who? That's where you want to focus your attention. Okay, so let's show you how this works. So, we select this, hit F8 to run it, and notice in the Jia demo directory, it created this localhost.mof. Okay, this is the configuration document. It's a standards-based document. And now, when I say start DSC configuration, what it's going to do is it's going to take that document, send it to the system. In this case, it's the local system. The WMI agent there will then take that document, call all the providers, saying, hey, are you in this state? Yes? Great. No? go ahead and make it so. Okay, so now we've gone and created this. Okay, now I'll bring up another session. By the way, I don't know how many of you are familiar with this. ISC is really quite a wonderful tool. As I'm writing all this code, and as part of it, I've been using, you know, multiple screens with ISC here and ISC here and multiple tabs. It's just a wonder. Anyway, so Control-T brings you up a new PowerShell session. So brand new, clean, wonderful, has nothing to do with that previous thing. So if I say get history, it says, what are you talking about? There is no history. That's over in that other session. So here now, I do an enter PS session. Now notice in my slides, I said enter GIA session minus name equals. I'm going to develop a commandlet for that. That's really just going to be a simple command on top of this command. Here's how you what's actually going to happen. You say enter PowerShell session minus computer name dot minus configuration name. I don't know why we called it configuration name. Wasn't the best name. Anyway, that's why we're going to rename it something else. But the name, if you recall, was the endpoint. It was demo one EP. So we connect to that system. Okay, I have my prompt. I say get command. And notice it doesn't show me many things. Notice here, if I do in regular PowerShell, if I say get command, it's lots of stuff. Here, when I do get command, it's a very small set of stuff, okay? Now, pipe two, sort source. You will notice that this list is larger than this list, okay? However, this list is here. So you see, get process, stop process, get service, restart process, get things, okay? Those other commands are commands that I added because I know that they're safe and that they improve the interactive experience. Now, that's not entirely true. I have a bug. It's okay. We ship bugs. We're going to fix it. That's why the X is in front of XGIA. The next version will have this fixed. Turns out that new object is not a particularly safe command to expose, and so I'll extract that in the next version. But these are things that allow me, like get command, you want to see what's available, etc. So notice I can do get process. Well, that's great. But then when I try and do something like stop process, process minus ID, what the heck was LSASS? That's always a one. That's always a test of your convictions. Like, if you try and kill LSASS, okay, 652. So if my code's wrong, if I did this wrong, we're gonna have a short session. It's back to the PowerPoint. Oh no, it worked. Okay, now notice the error message. The error message says the parameter cannot be found that matches the name ID. So there's not even a security check here. It's just like, dude, don't even know what you're talking about. I'm not even gonna say no. I don't even know what to say no to. It doesn't exist. There's just nothing there to do. So then I can say, well, no, I want to stop the name LSASS. I says, dude, what are you talking about? You can't stop that. I accepted the name, but I couldn't validate the argument on the parameter name. The argument LSASS does not belong to the set calc or notepad. So if you took a look, get process calc, get process. Oh, darn. Get process calc. There is a calc. So I could do stop process minus name calc. Do I want to kill it? I say, yes, die, you evil scum. And voila, it's gone. So pretty fine degree of control. And so that's what that's how this works. You like that? Okay, so now let's do the next one. So the next one, demo two, is I've got a GIA toolkit. This is SMB get. Okay, so hey, I got my guy over here, he's going to deal with my process stuff. He's going to restart Calc. He's going to kill Calc and Notepad because I don't want those run on my servers. He can restart SQL stuff, or I guess he can restart everything that begins with A. That's your job. You don't have admin privs. Don't need that for that. You, I'm going to say, you can do some SQL or SMB stuff, and I'm only going to give you access to the getters. So here, you have the module, SMB share, and only getters. So let's see what the difference is. So I say get command minus module SMB share. In fact, what I'll do is I'll pipe it to outgrid view. So look at all the stuff I can do with SMB share. I mean, quite a few things, right? Oh, let's see, I can block access, I can close things, I can disable things. Oh, disable things, that could be bad, right? Remove things, okay, so yeah. I definitely don't trust you with removing stuff, you know? See how this works out. First, I'm gonna give you access to getting things, okay? So then, I go ahead, and just as we did before, I set up my endpoint. This time, it's demo 2 endpoint. Just as before, I specify the toolkit and an ACL. Pretty simple, and everything else is the same. So let's do it. Let's do it. Notice the verbose. We really worked on that. And the goal here with the verbose is it should be able to just see things and recognize them, right? You shouldn't have to parse things. You know, you shouldn't have to read them. You just recognize them. And you'll, if you work with it for a while, you'll see, right? So here, you start a test, you end a test, you start a set. Here's where we're doing things. The start set for G endpoint 2, we test whether something's there. Here, do this test. We set up this Gia session account. We set up a Gia startup file. We do all that. Now, CLS, enter PS session. Well, here, let's just go back to where we were. Here, you specify 2. And we connect, do a git command, and look at that. So notice all my SMB gets. Okay, again, the rest of the commands were utility commands to make the interactive experience nice. But notice, these guys are not gonna be deleting things, they're not gonna be disabling things, they can do getters only. Now notice also here, when I did that get command, and module SMB share. Notice it has the name and its module is SMB share. But here, its name, its source is SMB get toolkit. Okay? So, in fact, what's happening underneath the covers, and pretty shortly, you'll want to put your seatbelts on because next stage of the talk is where I drill down into the details to say exactly how this happens. What's actually happening is I'm not merely surfacing those commands to you. In fact, what I'm doing is I'm creating proxy commands for each of those commands, and I'm creating a new module for them. That's why when you saw it started, it took a while to start up. In fact, it's a brand new module that then you know, controls exactly what you can and cannot do. So you'll see the details of that. But that's why it has a new name, the SMB Get Toolkit. And of course, let's see, get SMB share works, yay, remove SMB share public. Again, have no idea what you're talking about. Again, I don't even deny you it. I don't even know what you're talking about. So it's even better. Lastly, demo 3, the file system. This one is sweet. Actually, you know what? I'm just going to run it, and then we'll describe it. And let's clean this up. Okay, it's done. Now I connect to that demo 3 endpoint. Again, it's creating that new module. Now, here's the thing that's so cool. Get command. Again, you'll see a limited set of things. Our file system toolkit, let's see, pipe to where source match file sys. Okay, so notice these commands, if you're familiar with these commands, these are the directory commands, right? The namespace commands, right? So I can do print working directory, I can say cd to c/temp, right? Do a dir, good stuff. I can say, oh, there's this test3.csv. I can say copy item test3.csv to test4.csv. Let's see if that actually worked. Test. Yeah, that worked. Great. Now, what was the content of that? Let's see. So cat test4.csv. Nope. So what I did was I created a run space where you can do file manipulation. You can do file management. You can't read the files. No, my friend. You cannot read the files. Why would you want to read the files? What business do you have reading the files? You can back up the files. You can see what files are there. You can change the permissions on files, but you can't read the files. Steve. We're gonna get right there. Okay, so the question was, what about .NET methods? Because if I can write a program, then I can just write a program that access that. We're going to get into all the details there. But it's worth noting here, whereas I can run all the commands, and I can even run pipelines, right? I showed that. Well, I didn't show it, but anyway, you can do pipelines. You can't do simple things like 2 plus 2. Okay? Why is that? And that says, because the run space is in no language mode. So we're going to get into the details of that. But here's the final thing I wanted to show you, was that you can indeed perform all sorts of file manipulation, but not allow people to have access to the contents of the files. And that's a lot of customers that I've talked to, just really, that's exactly what they want. So let's go back to the presentation. All right, so fair warning, all that stuff, great stuff, sort of level 200 stuff, talks about the security, the toolkit, and if you like that level, we're sort of done. Great, feel free to leave, that's fine. The next level is where we go into lots and lots of detail. So this is the details, this is where we're going to geek out. It doesn't really help you manage your systems, it really doesn't help you secure the systems, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to explain underneath the covers the mechanisms that we're using so that you have a better understanding of how we actually accomplish this and how you can secure your systems using it. But again, you do not have to understand any of this, and truly I won't be offended if you leave, but don't go on your evals. Oh, it got too detailed. Anyway, so... So first, why PowerShell? Why all this fixation on PowerShell? Why didn't you just use something else? And the answer is that just enough admin is really all about controlling admin activities, right? Admin actions. And PowerShell is all about admin actions. That's what we do. We do admin actions. Now, like all shells, Bash, KShell, all these DCL, etc., PowerShell dispatches commands. Right? You type get process, we find get process, we dispatch it. Every shell does that. And because of that, you can control what gets dispatched to things like path and modules, et cetera. So you say, hey, here's the path to look things up. And if something, you don't want somebody to see something, you just change the path and they won't be able to find that. Okay, so like other shells, you can do that. So that's pretty typical stuff. However, PowerShell adds this notion of command visibility. Now, that's fundamentally different, okay? Now, also, unlike many other shells, PowerShell does the command line parsing, okay? So typically, in the Unix system, when you say ping, blah, 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 they find out who's supposed to run ping, and they take the rest of that, and they give it to the ping command, and the ping command parses the rest of it. We don't do that. Ping command tells us what its parameters are. We do the parsing, and then we give the parameters to the ping command. Okay? So what that means is that this parsing is all driven off data structures, and you can program those data structures. Now, you can program those data structures, and then you can use them to create proxy commands, which call the underlying thing. And this combination of visibility and proxies are the key thing that make this possible. Now, let's talk about visibility for a second. Visibility basically says it controls whether things can be invoked or run. Okay, think about that, invoked or run. So when something is public, it can be both invoked and run. Let's say a user can invoke it and the system will run it. If it's private, it can be run, but it cannot be invoked, which is to say the system will run it, but you can't invoke it. So if you can't invoke it, who can invoke it to run it? And that's where the proxy comes in. So the proxy, you say, the proxy calls the underlying commandlet. So what we do is we say this proxy is public. It can be both run and invoked, so you can invoke it. And it calls the underlying function, but that underlying function is private, which can be, it can be run, but you can't invoke it. The only thing that can invoke it is that proxy commandlet. So in this way, we protect the user from accessing the underlying things, and we provide a security layer to you. And then the proxy determines what functions you actually surface to the user. So let's drill in. Creating the proxy. Okay, so I mentioned we own the parser. If you do a get command stop process, you get a data structure describing the command. You can then call command metadata. You can new up an object called command metadata, passing it that, and get the metadata. This is that parsable, the object that the parser uses. You can then program this metadata. So here's what we're doing is we're taking that metadata. It lists all the parameters for the commands. So what I'm doing then is I'm going to remove the ID parameter for get stop for stop process. This means you can no longer say stop process minus ID. We then take the name attribute, and we're going to add a set of validation constraints. So if you've ever programmed PowerShell, you know that we have these notions of validation constraints. So for instance, if you have some values, take some integer, and the value has to be greater than 5, you could write that in code in your script, but we tell you don't do that. Use a validation constraint that says the value has to be greater than 5. And some people have said, well, why would I do that? It's kind of odd that I do this validation constraint. It just saves me a line of code. But no, it's true. It's false. It's a false question. It saves you 2 lines of code because if you do the test, the second line of code is an error message, right, if it didn't pass. And that error message, if you write the error message, you're going to write a crummy error message, and I guarantee the error message you write is different than the error message he writes, which is different than the error message he writes. So our common customer, when he encounters the same condition, is going to get a gazillion different errors, and he's going to be confused as heck. So instead, what we say is, use my validation constraint, which is just an attribute on a parameter, and then we do the validation, and if it doesn't work, we generate a common error, which then people recognize, they know what it means, and we do the translation to all the other languages, because you probably didn't translate it into French. Why would you, right? Anyway, so that's why we have these validation constraints. So PowerShell has a rich set of validation constraints. We can constrain how many things are given to us, the values that they have, whether they have to be a set of values, or even a regular expression. So this can be extremely, extremely rich. So here, programmatically, what we're doing is we're taking the name parameter and we're taking one of these validation constraints and we're saying, add it to that parameter. So what we're saying is name can only accept values, notepad or calc. And then we publish the proxy. So the way you publish the proxy, in this case, we assign it to function $stopProcess. I'm not sure everybody has that in focus, so let me just skip out here a second. Oh, you can't see that. In PowerShell, exit, we have, exit, PS Pro, process. We have drives. Okay? These drives, they're like the C drive, the D drive, but there's also other drives, and one of those drives is the function drive. So do you ever look at the function drive? Kind of funky. Dir function. And it shows you all the functions. Right? So if I say function foo, wow, really? Right? Now I can say foo, right? That's a function. And if I say dir function colon foo, it's there. Cool. But I can also do dollar sign parentheses or squiggle bracket function bar equals, sorry, and now if I type bar, I just run it. Okay, so that's a way, you know, PowerShell 404, you're now becoming PowerShell masters. You know the secret handshake. If you haven't learned the secret handshake, come talk to me. You're now qualified. Okay? So that's what we do here. So what we do is we're going to assign that function. Oh, sorry. I'm sure this is a good... Oh, good Lord. I know. Something crazy here. Extend. Oh. Because this is all such a good idea. All right, there we go. Okay, sorry. So this is the mechanism, the syntax we use to set that function. And there's this proxy command, create, you give it that metadata object, we create the function, and you just assign it. Voila, you have that. Now, at this point, you have two stop processes, right? Two commands called stop process. One's a commandlet and one's a function, okay? So now what we have to do is we have to go take that original thing and we make it private. And so now the user can't invoke it. The proxy can invoke it, but the user can't. So that's the trick. That's the heart of it. The next step is these PS PowerShell session configurations. These PowerShell session configurations, when you do PowerShell remoting, you connect to an endpoint. You're actually connecting to one of, like, a bunch of them. In fact, by default, there's quite a few. I'm not going to do that again. You know what? Let's just see if I can do this machine. Or actually, you know what I should do? I should do the presentation on this machine and the demo on that one. There you go. Given enough time and resources, I will figure this stuff out. Okay, so now we switch, get rid of this nonsense. Come here, duplicate. Happy. Okay. So by default, if I do get PS session configuration, type to form a table name, actually sort name, form a table name. What you'll see is the demo endpoints that I set up, and here are the default ones. Okay? Whenever you actually do, you know, new PowerShell session to a remote machine, you're actually connecting to Microsoft.PowerShell. But there are other ones. There's the workflow endpoint, there's a 32-bit endpoint, and then Server Manager has an endpoint to be able to connect in. So, you know, Server Manager does all that remoting. Ever wonder how it did that remoting? Server Manager has its own endpoint that it connects to. And that's this one here. Okay? So, there are all these endpoints. We call them configuration names. They have the name. Each one of them can have a different ACL. They can have a startup script and a set of run-as credentials. So that's the magic. We say, I'm going to create a new endpoint. I'm going to give it an ACL. Now a regular user can access this. I'm going to say run-as, and I'm going to set up the special user account, which has local admin privs. And then I'm going to run the startup script. And the startup script is the heart of it. The startup script is the thing that controls the environment. Okay? So here's how you do this, right? So you do get credential into this credential here. And what we do is, in my toolkit, I go, when I create an endpoint, I go and create that admin account. I create the credentials. What I do is I create a password, which is 127 characters long, random password. I assign it to that account. I now have those credentials, and I provide those same credentials to this run as endpoint. So when it runs, it's going to run as that guy. By the way, underneath the covers, I create a scheduled job, a scheduled task, to every night go and reset those credentials. So it'll go and create a new 127-character password, reset the credentials, reassign those credentials to the endpoint. Okay? So you register a PS session configuration, you give it name. I say show security descriptor UI. Most people can't just type a SIDL by themselves. Anybody got that skill? No one in the world has that skill. So this brings up a GUI editor that you can go and select that. Now, having done it once on one system, you can then get PS session credential and copy and paste that SIDL from one system to another. That's how I do it. And then you specify the startup script, okay? Initialize the maintenance endpoint, you say run as credential, and voila, that's how you have it. By the way, there you go. Now, point is that these startup scripts can do anything, okay? The key thing it has to do is it has to set the language mode, okay? And the way you do that is $execution context, session state, language mode equals, and it has to be one of these values, okay? By default, things are running in full language mode. You can do anything in full language mode. You can color outside the lines. You can call reflection. There is no security whatsoever in full language mode. There's constrained modes, constrained language. Now, if you have trusted admins, there would be some scenarios where you can use this. But in general, the thing you want to be using is no language. No language basically says the parser isn't even involved. So you might wonder, wait a second, how is it that the parser's not involved? When I typed enter PS session, I wasn't typing data structures. I was typing this full command line with parameters and pipelines, et cetera. How can the parser not be involved? And the answer is PowerShell's magic, right? What PowerShell does is when we do PowerShell remoting, if we detect that the remote system is in no language mode, the local system does the parsing. The local system does the parsing. It creates a data structure that then gets sent over to the remote system, and the remote system then just executes that data structure. What this means is that the parser is often, we have a very, 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 very secure parser, but you know what? It's code, and it has an attack surface to it. So in no language mode, you eliminate that entire attack surface on that remote machine, and you just send it a data structure. Okay, so that's the number one thing, is you have to set no language mode. You can also control what can be loaded and seen. So in the execution context, there's something called session state. In that session state, it defines what can be run. Scripts, by default, says star, that says run anything. If you say clear, it says run nothing. Same thing with applications. Applications are things like native Win32 executables. Ping, IP config, etc. Here, we'll clear those, and then if you want, you go back and add in the specific ones that you want. Now, notice that what you have to do is you have to specify the full path name of the executable that you want. So you pick those things, and you set those. And then you can change, you get the command, you can set the visibility of certain things, set it to private. And you'll always want to hide invoke expression. Invoke expression is by far, you know, the chainsaw of PowerShell, right? And there's no guardrails. You know, the chain comes off sometimes. It's a dangerous, dangerous, dangerous thing. Now, in the right hands, it's incredibly powerful. Most of us are not the right people to be using it, okay? But there are certain people who really need to. In general, you know, if you apply a chainsaw to your leg, it's a really bad experience. So you always, always, always want to invoke expression hidden, make it private. New objects, not quite the same level as invoke expression, but there are. It's a very leaky command where lots of things can happen, and so you want to make that private too. Again, right now I have a bug where I have to make that public, but I'll be fixing that. Next is we set up logging. Everything that I was doing in those actions was logged automatically. And here's how you do set up logging. You get the module, and there's a parameter on the module called log pipeline execution details. You set that equal to true, and then every command in that module we'll log the details. Now, what's that look like? So here's a snapshot from the event viewer. So notice the command line said GPS no star CA star pipe to SPSS, right? So we logged that. You're happy, right? I mean, what the heck? You knew exactly what the user did. It's like, well, do you? Okay, so now watch further on down. We give lots of details, right? We say who was doing it, user ID, Jeffrey, what host they were using, what version they were using, host ID, engine, okay, lots of details. But down here, we see, by the way, can you see this? Down here, we see parameter binding. So it says get process. So this GPS here translated to get process. Okay, that's great. And then it was using positional parameters, but this is telling me, oh, that bound to the name, oops, name, and the values were no and CA. So again, that didn't really help me. But it pipelined to stop process, well, to SPPS. That tells me it mapped to stop process, and it took the input object, and it tells me what it actually translated to. That translated to, I was gonna stop process calc and stop process notepad. So by the way, this logging's been there since version 1 or 2. It's been there for a very long time. So you can have the full details of everything people are doing. Pretty good stuff. Now, in this login script, you can do anything, like literally anything. So here's an example where there's a, when you connect to a user, when you connect, there's something called sender info. In fact, let me show you that, because that's actually, I meant to show you that earlier. Wrong one. Demo 3. Actually, I'm not sure I did that. Well, let's find out. So I published a command, who am I? Okay, good. Who am I just takes, remember I saw $PSSenderInfo? This just outputs $PSSenderInfo. And notice here it says connected user. And so I'm connected as ntdev jsonover, that's me. But it says run as user, and that's my local machine. And this is GSA, Gia session account. Demo 3 EP. That was the account that I created. So I came in as one user, but then everything I run runs as another user. Now, why is that interesting? And the answer is, imagine you go and you get the connected user who came in. You could send mail saying, hey, this user connected to this machine. Okay, so why is that interesting? At some point, what you'll see is that we'll create these lockdown environments, but in order to really work, you know, the reality is that for a while, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to allow access to another endpoint, which allows people to do anything, okay? Because otherwise, they'll say, oh, I couldn't do my job because it's your security mess. You know, not my fault, it's yours. It's those security people, they're jerks. They won't let me do my job. Like, okay, fine. So what we're going to do is you should do your job by using the secure lockdown endpoint. But if you need to, you can use this other endpoint where you can do anything you want. But be aware, we're going to log everything that you do, and we're going to get mail that says, you know, that you did that. And so we're going to have a conversation. So, yeah, that's fine. Those guys are really jerks. We're going to ask you what you did, and then we're going to go to them and say, hey, why can't they do that with this lockdown? You know, make it so. So that's a really powerful technique. So, again, it's because you can do anything in a setup script, startup script. You can also do things like this. You can say, hey, what day is it, right? And you can say, hey, if today is Saturday or Sunday, I'm not letting you in. Go home. What are you doing? You shouldn't be, you're doing stuff on the weekend? That's a strange thing for you. Anyway, so there you go. So you can do anything in there. So more on this logging. Everything that you generate, most everything in PowerShell generates a GUID, okay? And one of the GUIDs is the run space, you know, who am I, okay? Now, what we'll see, let me explain the problem that has to get solved. The problem that has to get solved is, I'm now logging everything that gets done, and I'm logging who did it. But who did it is that Runas account. And I set it up so that a bunch of you can all come in and use the same endpoint. So it sort of looks like it's all one person logging everything, and I don't know who really did things, okay? So what we need is we need some translation between the person coming in and the run space, you know, the ID that's actually going to happen. So that's what this code does, is you, each, if you go back here, you see run space ID? That is the run space that things were, that was the run space things were run as. So here, what you can do is you can find in your startup script, you can find out what your run space ID is, and then you can use that to look up the event log to find all your events. So imagine hooking the exit of a session to then grab your process ID, grab all the events that you did during this session, and then mailing it to your boss, right? Point being, you can do anything in a startup script. Lots and lots of fun. So again, I'm going to do some of these things, not all of them, but I wanted to teach you the mechanisms in case, you know, a number of people, especially the ones that left early, they're going to just take my toolkit and use it as is. Some of you masters of PowerShell will say, hey, that's kind of cool. I like your code. Oh, I see how you're doing that. I got a better idea. And so I wanted to give you the details of how we're doing it so you can take it and go beyond. Or tell me, hey, Jeffrey, here's a better way to do it. Okay, so in summary, the key message, the key thing I want you to walk out with is the understanding and the appreciation that your admins are part of the attack surface. And if you don't have a plan to address that attack surface, you do not have a security plan. Okay, next. The approach we're taking with the Jia Toolkit is to incrementally reduce the admin exposure. We want to reduce the number of people that have admin privileges, take it away because they don't need it. Next is we want to reduce the impact of those admin privs. Whenever we do something, we want to use the least admin privs required so that if those credentials get harvested, they can't spider their way across the network. And then lastly, what we want to do is we want to say that when someone has those admin privileges, I want to be very clear about what they can and cannot do. And again, the toolkit allows you mechanisms to be very fine control or very coarse control. My suggestion, start very coarse and then refine it over time. We have very simple concepts here, the GN toolkit. You define the set of PowerShell commandlets that you want to put into this toolkit. They should be focused in on what someone needs to do to a server. You then have this Jia endpoint. This is the endpoint that says, you're going to connect to this. Underneath the covers, I run as a local admin account and give you access to just those tools. And then, of course, the endpoint account. Underneath the covers, you don't really need to know about it, but that's the thing that is the magic. That's the thing that runs everything and is managed for you. So back to our Michael Hayden. Michael Hayden was one of the keynote speakers at Black Hat 2010 when things started to really heat up. And some people from the audience said, you know, Michael, Mr. Hayden, what are we supposed to do about all these attacks, right? And his answer was, man up and defend yourself. Now, the real story here is there is no backstop. There's nobody that has your back. It's you. You got to man up and defend yourself. If you don't do these techniques, there's nobody there to protect you, okay? So the toolkit is really about, Just Enough Toolkit is a PowerShell role-based administration toolkit so that you can take it and defend yourself against these attacks by using the techniques that we mentioned. And with that, we have a few minutes for questions. You can shout them out if you want, or you can go to these microphones. Oh, by the way, there you go. Get that guy in a blast container. Okay. Yeah, the question was, are you able to hook the session end? And the answer is yes. In your startup script, you are running in full language mode. So what you can do is you can hook objects there and execute code on the exit. Great question. Yeah, you picked right up on it. Hey, if you can allow people to copy it, can't they just copy it to their thumb drive or to some network share that they have? And the answer is currently yes. And that's why a future version of the Jia toolkit, although I'm going to crank these out pretty quickly, has what's called a parameter type. Okay. Now, a parameter type basically says, hey, you were asking for a string, but instead of a string, it requires this other type. And the type that I'm going to create is what I call a charu type, which basically says, I'm going to allow you a well-defined set of paths that can be accessed, and if you try and provide a string that isn't start with one of those strings, it's going to throw an error. So what that means is, for all of those namespace navigation commandlets, anything that takes a path, I'm going to change its type to be a charu type, provide you a mechanism to say, in this run space, here are the only paths that they can work with. So I do not have that working. I've got a prototype. Honestly, the management of the allowed paths is the trick. I haven't figured that out yet, but yeah, definitely. Again, the power of PowerShell, it can do all that. It is. It is limited to what the local user can get to anyway. Correct. Yeah, sudo. Yeah, well, some people say, oh, this is just sudo. And the answer is yes and. The Unix guys definitely do not have the ability to control the parameters. That's the thing that really is, in my opinion, quite a bit different. The ability, you know, in Unix, I can say, you can stop processes and you can't. I can't say, you can stop these processes and you can stop those processes. So that's, I think, the kind of big difference here. Yes, sir. It deals with GUI tools by shunning them. This does not work with GUI tools at all. What you want to do is you want to, we've for a while now have been pushing and encouraging the community to write their tools on top of PowerShell. So that's the answer. You'll see that like show command, if you're familiar with show command, currently it does not work with remote run spaces, and I will do that so that it will be aware. Let's see. So here is show command. Hello, show command. Where's show command? Oh, right, I can't do that there. Oh, so notice, well, there you go. I'm in a remote run space here, and notice when I tried to hit show command, it said, it's disabled. Now when I exit, and I click it, it'll show it. Why? Because it only works against the local run space. The point being, stop, process. When I see that, it shows me, oh, here's my by ID, here's by name, and it shows all this stuff, right? we will fix this so that show command, when it works against a remote endpoint, will only show you the commands in that remote endpoint. In the case we showed, these two tabs would be gone. And this name, instead of having a star here, would have a combo box, and it would say you can stop Calc or Notepad. And so, you know, that will be a help. But in general, yes, there are a number of great GUI builders on top of PowerShell. And so if your admins require GUIs, that's what you'll do, is to write them. There's Power GUI from what used to be called Quest. I don't know if they're called Quest anymore. That's a very good tool that can work with this. Sapien has a toolkit to build your own GUIs on top of remote PowerShell, and the community has something called ShowUI, and so we're going to be working with those guys to make them aware of the need here and get more and more GUIs written over PowerShell. Any others? Yes. Yeah, just shout it out. I can't see you. Actually, I couldn't hear that. Can you use a microphone or shout louder?
Okay. Is this to restrict access, like connecting to files, like NetApp or Epsilon?
Could you use this to restrict access to remote filers like NetApp or Epsilon? I don't know the answer to that. I don't think I understand the question. But maybe afterwards we can follow up. There's one right here.
Yeah,
Okay, so you said, hey, in the earlier session, you mentioned that DSC only has one MAW file. How do you merge things? And the key to DSC, let me give you a little background. The key to DSC is to be simple, simple, simple. Now, at Microsoft, we've had a number of configuration management things that have all kind of fallen on the rocks. And they fall on the rocks and kind of collapse because of complexity. And where they really collapse is where you have multiple sources of truth. So I'm hyper-allergic to multiple sources of truth. So for version one, what I said was, if there's multiple sources of truth, you guys duke it out somewhere else, figure out the answer, and then give me a MOF that is the definitive source, you know, figure whatever you figured out amongst yourselves. In the future, we think now that we know how we can allow multiple sources of truth in a way that is simple and conflict-free. So you'll see that in the future. I predict, no promises, but I predict you'll see that in the future. And there's another question here? Oh. Yeah, so the reason why the simplicity, again, the DSC is very much focused in on a DevOps mindset, which is really the ability to scale up, and the ability to scale really requires simplicity. The DevOps guys have a wonderful phrase, scale times complexity exceeds skill, right? So if you're only so smart, no matter how smart you are, if things are complex, that determines how much you can scale. If you want to scale higher, they have to be simple, simple, simple. So I don't ever want to go to a system and say, I wonder what's going on here. With a single MOF, I know exactly what went on here. Some of these other configuration management systems were really quite complex and quite goofy. You know, like you could tell me that you want this value has to be an integer, and you could say the same value has to be an even number, and you could say it had to be a prime number, and the system would figure out something that made everybody happy. It was just didn't work. Okay, with that, I think we're out of time. Thank you so much for sticking around.